want to break into the system.
Someone without access to the exam.
I have been doing a little hacking here, as a matter of fact.
Computers and the programs will start thinking, and the people will stop.
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence. If I got in for it, I could reconstruct it.
Everyone, welcome to the June 27th edition of the In the Now Show. This is your host, Slip Mode, along with trusty sidekick,
BR.
And
the Optimizer.
Optimizer is in the house. We do have the technical difficulties of last time of we're sharing a microphone, doing it ghetto style here at the In the Now Show. But we're gonna be able to pull it off. We're gonna do a little bit of self control.
Yeah, I'm learning to play with others.
We're gonna do
so. Optimizer, watch out.
Well, and we're going to have a little bit of balance, and we're going to be able to handle the situation as best we can. All right. Anybody doing anything interesting lately? Anything to talk about that you have going on?
No.
All right. Not at all. That's why we do the show,
yeah,
to give
right.
VR something to do.
This is the only time I get out of the house anymore because I am an unemployed scrub.
Unemployed scrub. Optimizer, how about you?
Nothing going on too special.
All right. Okay. Well, I will be... I'm going to be doing something pretty interesting. I'm going to be speaking at the HOPE conference here July 9th through the 11th.
Yay!
Yeah. Hackers on Planet Earth, HOPE. HOPE.net. And, you know, everyone should come out. It's going to be in New York July 9th through the 11th. I'll be doing my bit on the 10th, that's Saturday, at 9 o'clock at night.
So you can all hail Slip Mode.
Yeah. It'll be new to talk about hacker radio. I'm going to be talking about what's the purpose of it. You know, it's a pretty wide-range purpose. So
there's
a lot of people,
purpose?
Yeah. Yeah, for you to do something. Cause you don't.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So we're going to be talking about, you know, what you can do with it. You know, there's a lot of other shows out there like this show, but they do their own thing. They got a little different take on things, introduce different topics, go about things different ways. But it's all under the scope, Hacker Radio. And talk about some ways that you can set up your own Hacker Radio, how to get the word out, stuff about equipment, software, hosting, all the good stuff. And I don't know about the hardware that I'm going to be able to have to run this, but I'm trying to do a presentation with like a projector, and people can write down links and stuff that'll be up there for other shows and where hardware is at, and, or what types of things you can use. And also, I would like to do like little audio snippets of like some of the shows, some of the all-time hits, kind of greatest moments, I guess, and give some people some stuff to hear. To get a better idea.
Talking hard on In the Now.
In the Now. No, but so I'm going to be doing that. So come on down, enjoy HOPE, and enjoy my talk if you have a chance to do that. Okay. Well, we've got lots of interesting stories here. One of them is the Pentagon seeks U.S. spy powers.
Why would the Pentagon seek U.S. spy powers?
Well, because a lot of their spying power is not within the United States. They're not allowed to. They don't have the jurisdiction of doing it with the United States.
Yeah.
The Pentagon effort to persuade Congress to allow military intelligence agents to work undercover in the United States met with resistance in the House Wednesday. This is back in mid-June. With the provision when the provision was left out of the highly secretive intelligence funding bill. However, the Senate's version of the Intelligence Authorization Act of 2005 still includes the provision which exempts Department of Defense intelligence agents from a portion of the Privacy Act, a 30-year-old law with that outlaws secret databases on American citizens and green card holders. The bill would allow Pentagon intelligence agents to work undercover and question American citizens and legal residents without having to reveal that they are government agents. The exempt currently applies only to law enforcement officials working on criminal cases and to the CIA, which is prohibited from operating in the United States. Pentagon officials say the exemption would not affect civil liberties and is needed so that its agents can obtain information from sources who may be afraid of government agents, such as a green card holding professor of nanotechnology who formerly lived under a repressive government.
Well, so they're wanting to repeal this whole thing because of one nanotechnology professor?
Well, that was just an example.
Yeah, but that's, you know, like, I'm starting to be a little paranoid now because whenever I meet somebody, I'm going to be like, yo, Optimizer, are you affiliated with any law enforcement or government agency?
Yeah, you're going to have to help them out there.
Now, of course, under that new law, I could say no.
Well, if it gets passed.
Yeah, that's exactly. If it gets passed. And now I'm going to be really paranoid. I'm going to get a little sketchy, even though I do absolutely nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Make sure
if you ask a question to pass that quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
And go ahead and get as close as you can to the microphone. So.
Well, they did point out very clearly in there that they couldn't use the thing to put people in prison. It's just purely informational gathering purposes.
Yeah, but you know, that doesn't quite make total sense, you know, because what happens after they get the information?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, you know, when it's an illegal search and seizure. If they don't have a warrant or they're, if they don't have a warrant and they find out what it is, you know, they find that information, that's inadmissible.
I think you've forgotten a very important fact of the Fifth Amendment there, the ability, the right not to incriminate yourself. So you could say anything you want to in front of these people, and you're not incriminating yourself because you're not saying it to a person. You're not saying it to a government agent at that point. You're saying it to a regular person.
Yeah, because you haven't been informed of your rights.
Exactly.
There you go.
That's where the Miranda Act takes over.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's I guess, you know, intelligence gathering nowadays has become so complex because it's no longer, you know, you're our enemy, you know, and this is that. It's, you know, it's like, it's kind of like finding out secrets about other people within your own group, you know, and you got to do this little covert stuff and ask questions or whatever if you really care to do that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I bring it up because it's a little worrisome that, you know, there's so many more laws encroaching upon things that we have in our that would be the in and out dog in the background.
It's soon to be in the was gone.
Yeah, in the was here. Pictures on the website now, but
barbecue at Slipmoot House.
Yeah, yeah. Serving some Asian food.
Walk your dog and other Chinese recipes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, this one's tasty. You know, there's just so many things going on, you know, just all these things about limitations on what you can do, what you can modify, what you can play with, you know, ways information can be tracked and, you know, maintained about you and you know, your rights as far as, like, you know, searching your home and stuff like that with the Patriot Act. And, I mean, just all sorts of stuff is getting to the point to where, you know, it is giving, you know, the government the I would say in some ways the needed tools to do their job. But also it just gets a little scarier that they have that much access into your personal life.
It's kind of like fighting evil with evil.
Well, yeah. I mean, the only way to, like, take down the establishment is to be a part of it.
Well,
to be a part of it and then find a way to circumvent.
Except for what, you know, was it rule 5 of what I learned from, it's number 1 rule of what I learned from video games is any obstacle can be taken out by force.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I mean, not to take down the establishment. What I mean is if you know, if you have a problem with a particular area, you need to be a part of it. To get in there and give your, you know,
be the tool of change yourself.
Be the tool of change. You know, if there's change needed, so. So that
everything needs change.
Yeah, at all times. Well, it needs to evolve at least once. But yeah, so that is not been passed, but it might be passed. They left that out of the bill, is what they were arguing about originally. But the Senate's version of the bill is in there. I don't know about versioning or who has what, but...
Well, see, yeah, it's all semantics, and that's what makes a bill, you know, either effective, ineffective, or, you know, just a big old hole.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people out there for privacy would have to say that that's, you know, not cool to have that happening, to have people come in and be able to spy on you and, you know, be your buddy and talk to you and stuff like that, because information is generally going to be used against you if they're searching it out, you know, or if it's information about you. Now, if it's information about somebody else, then you gave that information for them to go after that person, you know. So either way, it's going to be causing a situation that maybe you don't want to have intended, and you won't really know about it unless you got busted or you see the guy get busted, you know, after you've done it.
Yeah, and then you don't even get, like, the silent witness reward.
Yeah, and even though you said...
you just told your buddy that, and, well, it turns out that he's an operative, and, well, then you just get screwed on both, you know, from both ways.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, you said, you know, it wouldn't be incriminating yourself. And I'm sure there's ways to argue that and put it in there. I mean, there is ways to argue that, but it's just... it's kind of weird. It's like, well, you know, it won't be that way, but then sometimes things turn out to be that way.
I think the idea of the informational gathering would be to catch you in the act, is what they would have to do, especially for an American. Off-soil is another thing entirely, but for an American, they could gather all the information they want to on you, but they would have to catch you in the act in order to put you in the slammer. There's no ifs, ands, or buts around about that.
Well, yeah, everything's hearsay until there's actually some sort of evidence. Yeah. All right. Now, this is kind of an interesting story. I know I always say that before every story. It better be interesting. I'm picking them out. You know, I'm trying to pick out
the
other ones.
Well, yeah, they caught your interest.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, I'm going to save this one.
Yeah. I guess I'm trying to convince everybody else it's interesting. But the...
like saying, hey, look, this is really cool.
They're like, it sucks. No, it's got a gizmo. but, no, we usually talk about all sorts of different stories about new technologies for security and stuff like that. This is a stealth wallpaper that could keep LANs secure. More like Wi-Fi LANs, actually.
Is it like, does it have a brass mesh in it?
Well, here, I'll let me read.
All right.
UK defense contractor BAE Systems has developed a stealth wallpaper to beat electronic eavesdropping on company Wi-Fi and wired LANs. Okay, so even so, like, doing, like, the herfing of, you know, monitor signals, stuff like that. The company has produced panels by using technology to produce a screen that will prevent outsiders from listening in on company's Wi-Fi traffic, but let other radio and mobile phone traffic get through. The FSS, the Frequency Selective Surface, panels are made in the same way as printed circuit boards, layers of copper and Captron polymer, and used on stealth bombers and fighter jets. They come in two varieties, passive, which is effectively permanent, and active, where various areas can be switched on and off to enlarge or limit the area of the network. The panels are 50 to 100 microns thick and can be applied to most surfaces, including glass. A company spokesman claimed that they also help reduce noise in buildings where a number of companies operate their own separate LANs. BAE Systems developed the new material with €145,000 of funding from the Radio Communications Agency, which is now part of Ofcom. BAE says that the material is cheap and will be developed in commercial. It will be developing it commercially through BAE's corporate venture subsidiary. There's no time scale for its commercial availability. So,
wow, what a cool thing!
Yeah, I'm going to actually put that on my walls once it becomes commercial. No, not really. But maybe just for total geekness fun, maybe I will do that.
I would. My only question is, have they thought of a ceiling product?
As far as...
Well, the walls might be necessary to cover, but wouldn't the ceiling as well?
You could probably use the same stuff on the ceiling.
Yeah, I think it's every... I think that's what they mean, wallpaper, you know, but they'll put it everywhere.
I think they'll lack a certain aesthetics there.
You're right. It probably would look kind of weird having wallpaper on the ceiling.
Well, you could probably actually put it above the drop ceiling or whatnot. You could probably actually implant it and then put it whatever ceiling cover you want. But that would bring up, instead of, like, war driving, it would be war flying. You'd have to, like, fly over stuff.
Which has happened.
Oh, I could believe it.
Well, actually, it was DEFCON 9, I believe, or 10 where they actually had a guy in a helicopter rent a helicopter out. And he did it. He picked up his... He actually would have won. I think he did win the Wi-Fi, the war driving contest. And they had to put a rule just because of him in the next in the following year, which was that it has you have to be on the ground.
Well, that explains why there's a darn helicopter that keeps circling around my house. It does nothing else but circle around. It's really strange.
VR, always interesting activities are happening around your home.
Yeah, VR, I think they call that the ghetto bird.
Yeah.
No, it's really not the ghetto bird. It's actually got different striping. It's totally different model. And it just flies around. And what's really strange is every time it flies directly above me, my cell phone cuts off.
Wow.
So I don't know what that means.
That would stop you from phoning home.
That's probably what they're trying to do. They're like, oh, we're picking up some strange signals over here. Let's check them out.
It's probably your lack of use of deodorant.
Oh, that's just because I use tinfoil.
Tinfoil. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I actually, oh, man, we talked about it in one of the other shows. There's actually a site dedicated to building a tinfoil hat for yourself. Showed you how to make it, various models and sizes, and even had some, like, what is it called when they get feedback and like, this tinfoil hat's great.
It keeps all my thoughts in.
Yeah, they're talking about that. Even at some really huge ones. But
I found a site a while back that was could teach you how to clone your neighbor's wife using household products. I thought that was really cool.
Wow, what would be the purpose of that?
Well, if she's really hot.
Wow. Clone the MILF, huh? All right. Okay, well, on other subjects related to cloning the MILF, Akami DNS had a pretty large issue here back in, around June, early June, mid-June. Starting around 8:30 a.m. EDT, a number of sources started to report a widespread Akami DNS issue. The large websites which use Akami for its DNS service no longer resolved the DNS and became inaccessible to their users. The affected sites were Yahoo, Google, Microsoft, FedEx, Xerox, Apple, and like many others, this situation improved around 10:30, mainly because of some of the affected domains temporarily switched from using Akami DNS service to their own DNS service. The problem seemed to be attributable to a distributed denial of service attack in Akami's DNS service, which we do not presently have the information to make a definitive assessment. According to Akami spokesman, the problem was not limited to Akami. He attributed the outage to an attack of the internet infrastructure on a larger scale. We do not currently know of any sites that were affected by the attack while using Akami services. And this article actually has a few things sitting in here. Here's another one that it all kind of put these all together. Today's post on the full disclosure mailing list warned readers about a phishing scam that directed its victims to a well-designed website that posed as a U.S. bank site. The sites use an Internet Explorer flaw to exploit or to place text outside the rendered page window and over the URL location bar, leading victims to believe that they're actually looking at the real banking site. The exploit cleverly calculates where to position the text and works surprisingly well for most situations or most installations on Internet Explorer. Other browsers are not affected by the problem as far as we know. The U.S. bank spoofing site uses the same exploit as the PayPal spoofing site reportedly recently on Broadband Reports forum. The same exploit was used by another PayPal spoofing site that we saw several weeks ago. Those attack vectors are based on BugTracks posts that date to the approximately a year ago. We are alarmed at the increasing number of exploit sightings in the wild and are not aware of an Internet Explorer that corrects this issue. There's what phishing is people out there that pose as other, you know, via email or stuff like that, where they'll send you an email. Looks like it came from Microsoft, and it's like, please download this bug update or something like that and run it. And you're just downloading something that's, you know, malicious code and installing it, and it basically does some bad stuff to your computer. There's a few viruses out there. One that happened to Rusty that we talked about on the last show that goes through Internet Explorer, and well, it doesn't go through it. Internet Explorer just runs some Java code that it shouldn't be running and downloads a program to your computer and installs it. Now, Rusty, I remember he said that he got it from looking at a picture. You like opened up the picture and in that area download it. But I remember reading in this one thing that said that the earlier reports that had to do with a picture were incorrect. I don't know, but basically it is web based. You went somewhere and it downloaded it. And there's quite a few Conga. I don't remember the new one that's out, but it's up there. That's finally been reported that exploits the JavaScript and downloads some malicious stuff. It doesn't do things exactly the way that Rusty did it. Described that it worked, but it did do basically the same function. Put a little backdoor in there. It didn't mention the fact that it connects back to an IRC network or anything like that. Rusty discovered that it connects back to IRC network and talked to the guy that was issuing all the commands to all of his slave bots and didn't get any response. So Rusty did the right thing by letting the IRC hosting service know about what was going on, so they didn't get busted like the previous story that we talked about, where an IRC servers were being misused at free. I forget the name of the IRC server company, and the FBI came in and took out their entire infrastructure to go take a look at it. Now, how's that to peak your day about your business running? So lots of baddies out there, things that are going on. These things just don't stop, folks. It's all about being as secure and as knowledgeable as you can, and that's one of the things we like to try to express on this show, is awareness.
Yeah, but isn't enough and just enough?
Of what?
Of, like, can we not just, like, figure out that, that there's got to be something that you can use that's at least mildly secure that you constantly don't have to worry about? Oh, there's, the 43rd exploit this week.
I don't know. I think the stuff that we would like to use is obviously has those problems inherently built into it because of its complexity and its availability and its on time. So I guess that's the way it is. I thought you were going to say, isn't enough, like when they're going to stop doing this kind of thing. But, there's some people that do it and they get bored, and then there's always somebody else to take their place.
Yeah, so I don't care. I already thought about that. But I guess I'm just looking for a cyber utopia.
Well, that would consist of women, right, PR?
Where I work, I see a lot of the damage to the end users, and it is absolutely vicious. It is hitting people in their pockets is what it's really doing in the end. These people have completely no way of removing the viruses or malware themselves, and everything that they trusted, like Norton Antivirus, they thought it was just a one-stop shopping for all the malicious stuff they can do to their computers, and just being horribly let down because these days you gotta have all the Windows updates, you gotta have the firewall, you gotta have the antivirus protection, and even that's
the pop-up blocker, the spam, you have to do all that. I actually had somebody that I went to the other day, and I was working. Go ahead.
Oh, that after I do all that, I only have about 2 minutes to work on my email.
Yeah.
And then I shut the computer off.
Yeah.
And I go away.
Yeah, I was at somebody's house working on their network, and they got infected with this one virus, and I actually still haven't figured out what it is, just from the various means of being able to look up of what was going on. I figured out how to disable it, and it was pretty neat on how it entered itself back into the system. Long story short, anyways, is that, he had to pay me to come out and do all this stuff to get rid of it. And, I do have a problem with Norton Antivirus is the fact that there's a lot of viruses it'll scan and say it's infected, but it can't get rid of it. And then you have to go download the removal tool from their website. Then it'll get rid of it.
I think a lot of it has to do with viruses rewriting many of the Windows necessary files. They actually make changes to those necessary files, and if Norton Antivirus were to simply just delete them, they would crash the entire computer.
Yeah. Yeah, this, I use programs like Panda Antivirus, actually, is pretty good. Yeah, they're one of my favorites. And, I've had machines where I'm using Norton's, and Norton's was already on it, and it wouldn't disinfect it, and I had to go download the removal tool, and then it got rid of it. But I had, like, that same virus effect hit a Panda machine that had it on there, and Panda Antivirus caught it, and it would, I guess I'm trying to plug Panda here. There's some other good ones out there, though. I'm plugging this feature, is that it saw it and it was able to remove it and disinfect it and all that right then and there. I've just been upset with Symantec. I've been able to grab it. I'd have to grab their tools instead of just using the software itself to get rid of it.
To Norton's defense here, though, professionally, we have to use several different programs in order to get rid of everything. We use Norton & McAfee, we use Panda, we use CW Shedder, we use AdAware. The list just goes on and on and on for these different things. And it's not just one or two. We use the whole array of antivirus and malware software.
Yeah. Yeah, like, okay, for instance, my one Windows box is a Windows 2000 box. It's got Zone Alarm on it. That does the pop-up blocking. It does, the firewall, and then I have Norton's. I don't have Panda because I just had Norton. So, I've got Norton's on there, and then I've got spyware, Spybot Search and Destroy, and all the patches come out, and I update that, and luckily I don't get much spam. Actually, I rarely get spam, and I've had addresses published forever. Actually, woo, I have two Gmail accounts now. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, my name has been taken. My normal name has been taken because it's a very common name. But I found it where I could do my name, my middle initial, my last name, and then I got slipmode gmail.com, and it's really neat. It's really cool. It's like a conversation. The way it looks, the replies, they're in little bubbles, and it says at this point in time this guy wrote this, and then you have another bubble. And then says it points out this person wrote this. Blah, 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 blah. Like a forums. It just goes back and forth.
Yeah, that's so much nicer.
Yeah, it's really great how they do it. And then, of course, when they send that email back out to anybody else, it just reads normally on their machine. But when you're using Gmail, it has everything in there. And I luckily got two accounts. The only way you can get an account now is if you get an invite. And actually, this girl I know gave me an invite. And she sent the email twice. At least I thought she did. She accidentally sent two invites, but she didn't know that she sent two invites, and neither did I. And I happened to suck up both of them. I kind of felt bad about that.
I think you need to invite me.
Yeah, I would like to invite anybody if I was able to, but you get an invite that specially pops up in your box. You have no control over it. If the Gmail gods deem it that you can invite others, then they will give you an invitation.
Ooh, so you need to grease some palms there, Pally.
Yeah, grease them up. A lot of grease. No, I don't know. I think if you have a lot of traffic, you know, a lot of emails and stuff. Like, I'm on there right now. I've got, like, no traffic. Nobody emails me there. I doubt I'll get a, to invite anybody else until I get some real traffic on there. All right. This is, let's see if I can sum this up. It's pretty large. A lot of reading here. This is basically talking about how this one writer here just does not think that certifications are all the hoopla that they're supposed to be. And the article's named Hiding Behind Certification.
Amen to that.
Yeah. I tried to sum it up as best I can, so I highlighted some of the good stuff here. Professional certification and accreditation turned out to be a process as messy, political, misleading, and dysfunctional as most enterprise software development and implementation initiatives. The critical difference, of course, is that testing software quality is easier and less ambiguous than testing the quality of the certification. He's just kind of making a point there. That's why I've been struck by the seemingly pathological need that so many CIOs have for the certification of skills and accreditation of organizational performance. I find this craving misguided and pathetic. What does it really say when someone is Microsoft certified, or is certified in network engineering from a quality university, or is it if a development organization has a capable maturity module level 3 rating, or ISO 9000 compliant? In many respects, these questions are as pointless and as silly as asking, what does it mean to graduate summa cum laude from Harvard or English in English, or how good of a lawyer will you be if you perform brilliantly on the multi-state bar exam, or to be a total jerk about it, how superior an executive would be if you had an MBA from a top 20 school. Unfortunately, these silly and pointless questions are templates for the questions many CIOs ask themselves when they seek to outsource development or weigh the quality of their own human capital investments. For reasons I fully understand, but totally reject, many CIOs increasingly look to certification and accreditation standards as market signals indicative of professional quality and reliability. This represents the laziest and most dangerous kind of cover-your-ass thinking by C-level executives. The truth, as we all so bitterly know, is the IT world is filled with certified accredited idiots. I bet you've hired a few. I know I have. The fact that someone has an aptly named BS from Harvard topped off with a misleading name Masters from MIT does not have a good development or developer or employee make. Does not make a good developer or employee make. We have to ourselves ask ourselves why we make the assumptions we do about initials with the elite credentials. The answer says far more about our personal biases than the professional attitudes and aptitudes and skills. Shame on us. Basically, it goes over a lot of stuff here, but I know somebody that knew a guy that got his MCSE and he didn't even own a computer. A Microsoft certified engineer. You know, there's a lot of people out there that
As long as you got a book, you can you can take a test and you can do it.
Yeah. I mean, the one benefit I know from certification means that you can be taught. Is really that it says is that you're able to be taught, you're able to be trained, and you're able to go through that kind of stuff. Now, do you have good problem-solving abilities? Maybe not. You know, maybe you can just, you know, you
well,
know
actually,
the answers and you can plug them in.
You solve the problem of how do you communicate that you actually know more than just checking your email on the computer.
Actually, as an interviewer where I work, I talk to many of the people who are coming in and applying at where I work, and what I finally come down to doing is instead of asking what kind of certifications do you have, I think of a few very critical questions. Questions asked during the interview that determine whether or not somebody has the skill and experience that you're looking for. In the old 98 days, I would ask the applicants questions like, what is MS-DOS compatibility mode within Windows 98? That would mean that they have technical expertise. It would mean that they have the experience. It would mean that they've been with computers for a while and having to know how MS-DOS works and how to fix the problems within Windows 98.
Yeah.
Wow. See, you would see right through all my BS.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
That's why he's called the optimizer.
Oh, yeah.
There
that's
we go.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Wait, that's so much better than, like, a 20-minute test that you have to grade and all that. That's just really effective.
To me, getting, accredited on certain things is good. It just shows that you have an interest. You can sit down and take the time to go through it and do it. But that's just only one portion of, you know, the whole gamut of understanding what's worthwhile in a person to see if they really have the skills to do what it takes.
I personally don't believe that the purpose of a certificate is to prove that somebody has the ability to do the job.
Yeah, right? I don't believe that is what it is.
The idea of a certificate is to say that this person knows the right answers to the questions more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's really what I think it is. Some of those questions, some of the verbiage of how things are and some of those tests are not real world specific anyways. You know, they're ridiculous. And it's to see if you understand the verbiage. They even play a lot of little tricks in there just so I think you can fail and pay for another test, you know.
The A-plus certification is notorious for that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I have it. I am able to certify it. There's a lot of crap. You know, and they give you like a 700-page book, and the questions are like, you know, they don't really go over a lot of the stuff. Plus, they cover useless stuff by like bus architectures on a 286, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's real world applicable there.
Yeah.
The purpose of the bus architecture question is actually to see how long have you been doing it, how long have you been in the business to establish experience more than anything else. If you know the bus architecture to a 286, that means you've paid your dues in the world, in the industry.
Yeah, but not if you just read the question last night, or the answer, the night before.
This is true.
All right, moving along here. Wow, so much to read. It's a little time. Okay, this is really interesting. We talked about some other hot Wi-Fi spots that are going on out there for free Wi-Fi. Texas was the last one that we talked about. Now, New Mexico will be covering 103 square miles of free Wi-Fi activity.
Planning another road trip.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you will be surfing porn while you're driving.
Well, you know, that's better than on Highway 666 where, you know, you can actually look out the window and see all the beer cans, you know, strewn across the scenery.
Wow.
So I much rather drive and view that than...
Yeah. Then you'd probably be one of the dead bodies over there by the beer cans because you got distracted.
Yeah, well, that's probably why there's, you know, that freeway has, or that highway has, like, the most deaths on it.
Wow. Let's see. The city of Rio Rancho is collaborating with Intel on USURF communications to establish historic technology precedents. High-speed wireless service will cover 103 square miles. Skipping through all that. We'll cover designed to be to 58,000 residents and hundreds of businesses, government and civic organizations. This first border-to-border citywide Wi-Fi hotspot marks the beginning of an era for the city that has been self-christened your wireless window to the world. I'm just waiting for all the fun that the 17-year-olds are going to have with it.
Oh my God, yeah, because they're going to be able to like launch attacks and be virtually anonymous.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. But you know, other than making that comment, it's really cool that's available.
Oh yeah, so you just need a really good monitor on there. And then that goes against privacy beliefs and becomes this whole catch-22 of you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
The feds declined to create a do-not-spam list.
Yeah, like that's going to work.
That's why they declined.
Yeah, I think they'll work probably about as well as the do-not-call list.
Yeah, that one is, yeah. The Bush administration said Tuesday, this is back in... If I read that, I always try to get the right date. Back in mid-June. Will not create a national do not call spam registry to discourage unwanted email, fearing it could backfire and become the target list for new victims. The Federal Trade Commission told Congress that senders of unwanted sales pitches might mine such a registry for names. Its chairman, Timothy Maris, quipped with consumers will be spammed if we do a registry and spammed if we do not. The commission was obligated by lawmakers, plus it's out of the country. You know, we don't have control of other people. Obligated by lawmakers to consider the proposal under the canned spam legislation that Bush signed in December, an idea patterned after the FTC's enormously successful Do Not Call registry to limit telemarketing calls. But the FTC concluded that on the internet, unlikely within the highly regulated U.S. telephone network, regulators would be largely powerless to identify those responsible for misusing the registry. Mirror said that given the risk of consumers adding their names to a do not spam registry, I wouldn't put my email address in such a list. Senator Charles Schumer, DNY, the leading supporter of the Congress of the no spam registry, said the FTC's decision was disappointing. I don't know if he's really thinking it through. The registry is not the perfect solution, but it's the best solution we have, Schumer said. Regulators instead proposed broad adoption of a new authentication technology that will make it more difficult to disguise the origin of unwanted emails. Several proposals from leading technology companies, including Microsoft Corp, are under consideration by the industry. A national do not email registry without a system in place to authenticate the origin of email messages would fail to reduce the spam burden and may increase the amount of spam received.
Yeah, because if I was a spammer, I'd get a hold of that and use that as a new, you know, email, you know, like address book.
Oh yeah.
Like, and, wow, look at all these free email addresses. It's great.
Okay. If the new authentication plan fails to emerge, the FTC will converge a federal advisory committee to determine whether the government could require internet providers to adopt one. Without effectively authentication of email, any registry is doomed to fail. Yada, yada, yada. A registry that identifies accounts used by children, for example, could assist legitimate makers or marketers to avoid sending inappropriate messages to children. Well, that's nice. At the same time, however, the Internet's most dangerous users include pedophiles who could use this to target children. So.
Oh, that's an emotional argument right there. It's all about the children. We're gonna take your freedoms away to protect the children.
Yep.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Slipknot. I'm not the world's best on when it comes to... how the internet infrastructure works, but it would not be that hard for many of these ISPs to identify overseas spamming computers by either IP address or whatever else, and simply just block incoming transmissions from them.
Well, there's a lot of, like, you know, there's two things. You just said blocking and then identifying. The one thing is you can block anybody you want, you know. You could actually block out an entire country if you wanted to. Which, for the most part, I don't think companies that are doing business or you that don't talk to anybody in other countries, because they try to block that out. For companies, they can do that with specific hardware. For home people, they can't do it at all. I mean, they don't really have a way of doing it. That's just kind of controlled by the ISP. Now, identifying, different people. You know, you can identify. Here's some ways I used to find people on the internet is find, get their IP address, and then you can actually go look to see who owns that block. You know, but it's usually like an ISP. Maybe it's a local ISP. Maybe it's a national ISP. You know, by then you'd have to call their offices. You know, and break it down. Sometimes there's static IPs, and people usually don't have their information registered with that. Sometimes it could be, coming from a Windows 98 computer on my neighbor's box over there, you know, that somebody infected with the virus and made that a spamming thing. So it's a lot harder to tackle that. I mean, there's attempts to do it, and it's quite intriguing to try to figure out the best way to do that, but it's really hard to regulate that from a national scale, I mean.
Well, short of people's computers getting hijacked for spamming purposes, I'm referring more to like the larger mainframer servers that are out doing that on mass scale. I mean, as an ISP, if you see the same message coming from the same source or same IP address from an overseas server,
yeah,
it wouldn't be that hard to say, okay, well, this same message just got sent to 500 of our different users. Let's block this guy because we know he's a spammer.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that might actually be like
somebody else uses that.
Well, that might actually be their little e.
What Optimizer is saying is that it exists, that you can do that.
Yeah,
you
could, but at the same time, it's not differentiable enough that it might be their stock portfolio that they're sending out to their stockholders.
I would like to point out a product out there called Add Subtract. Has a registry of all the known and upcoming servers out there, and you know, the different products and so forth. And the product actually blocks any kind of images, anything from their sites coming into your computer, including email. This kind of a service would not be too hard. And if just a few of the ISPs got together and contributed to the Add Subtract
registry,
then very quickly they would get shut down.
Well, I mean, booking it from that point, I've never even heard of that software.
Yeah, that's a beautiful system.
That's really good. I mean, that is another way. Wow, I'm going to actually try to take a look at that software. That's another way to handle it. Either trying to do authentication or do mass blocking by that means, and it goes on.
That sounds like something that we need to, like, write your congressman about and put that into a bill and mandate them to do that.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's kind of a community-based thing, and it's wow. They sell that? I mean, is that
free? Add Subtract is available on the shelves at most any retail store.
Is it free? Or is it
I don't believe it's free.
It wouldn't be free on the shelf. Okay. All right. Well, there's nothing wrong with paying a little bit of money to get that cleaned up. Wow, that's interesting. I think I should do a review of it, possibly, or something like that, and report on it, possibly on the next show. Oh, the next show, that's going to be homeless talk here in a minute, because the next show is scheduled to be the Sunday that I'm going to be at Hope, so we'll have to figure that out.
Oh, I think we can postpone it or do it another time.
Yeah. That sounds really interesting. Wow. A lot of good talk here. A lot of stuff here going on. Might even get rid of some of these stories here. Skip that. This is kind of neat. We talked about like quantum computing and stuff like that here. This website has a quantum computer simulator where you're allowed to put quantum algorithms in and it will compute it for you.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ah.
The website name, wow, really bad that this didn't show up, the website name. But if you want to email somebody over there, it's qc@firsthg.de. I don't even know if that's actually the website. Maybe it's first.fhg.de, possibly. They call it the Fraunhofer Quantum Computer Simulator. Tell me if I'm reading that right. You might be able to help me out. First sentence.
Yeah, Fraunhofer is correct.
Fraunhofer. Computer Quantum Computer Simulator, a web-based computing service for the quantum computer community. Basically, what it does is an engine that supports the investigation of quantum processes of up to 31 qubits, and it basically simulates that process and allows you to discover how quantum works a little bit by running a few things with it. So they started out with a beta test of our service. Everybody's invited to test it. You can create simulations of up to 27 qubits. So for bigger jobs, feel free to contact them at qc@first.fhg.de. That's probably the website, too.
Wow, that's perfect to like start doing my some of my string theory, you know, algorithms. Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. All while drinking a Mountain Dew.
That's right.
Yeah.
And next, how to get to Venus in 32 hours.
The string theory, is that did that come from the fuzzy logic theory?
No, it came from the lint in the belly button theory.
The belly button theory. Well, the string is kept. All right, now this
that's how you round it up. You got to lasso it and pull it out.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
It gets a little hairy.
Wow. And that's why we have VR on the show. We have a big fan base for just these comments. So, yeah, this is an article about how the fact that we don't have the right to say no about giving out our identity. If it's asked, we have to give it out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I heard about that. I was not happy.
Yeah. If asked, you must give your name. If police ask, you must give your name. The High Court rules 4-5 that officers can arrest people who won't reveal their identity. U.S. citizens do enjoy a constitutional right to refuse to reveal their identity when requested by police, in what may become a major boost to U.S. law enforcement and anti-terrorist efforts. The U.S. Supreme Court Monday, which is back in mid to late June, upheld a Nevada law that makes it a criminal offense for anyone suspected of wrongdoing to refuse to identify himself, and didn't say herself as well, to police. I think it's crap. Let me read some more here. Civil libertarians see the decision as a significant setback and it remains unclear to what extent it may open the door to issuing of national identification cards or widespread identity operations keyed to terrorist profiling at bus terminals, train stations, sports stadiums, and on city streets. It's a green light to explore the bounds of how much personal information can be demanded on pain of arrest, says Timothy Lynch of the Cato Institute in Washington. It also gives a green light to perhaps the Congress to move to with a national law. Go ahead, Professor.
My only question is, how many civil liberties are we going to give up to stop terrorism?
Yeah, you know, because I haven't seen any more big buildings going down lately.
You know, I thought I was really, really hoping that, you know, the name Todd Beamer and Flight 93 would become the new battle cry of this generation of America. Because they actually took their own responsibility and to find out that, you know, they figured out that they needed to do something to secure their own liberty. Even though it cost them their life. But isn't that why we go to any war? Or justify any war? And we wouldn't have to do this if we would just say, you know what, I don't want to be a child to the big brother of the government. I want to take my own personal responsibility.
And your own hands.
Yes. And if I don't want to be secure, that's fine. Because insecurity is the only way you can live in a free society. Because that security and liberty are mutually exclusive. They do not happen.
Yeah, very true. Mark Rottenberg, Executive Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington, says the decision has clear implications for the war on terror. We know identification continues to be one of the key demands of government agencies involved in Homeland Security. Depending on how broad it is, could open the door to new demands for identification. The ruling marks for the first time in the nation's highest court has endorsed the provision of compelling citizens to reveal information in a citizen police encounter that may become a police investigation. We're just losing everything. I mean,
you said earlier hiding behind save the children or, you know, spare the children, having, you know, the pedophile sending email and trying to use the children as a scapegoat for putting through these laws. I would not be surprised if our legislature is attempting to use terrorism as an attempt to put more control on the general populace.
Oh, it's already been done.
Well, that's exactly why we are in Iraq right now. Because we all, if you really look back under the news, there was one single person that we know of that's involved in Al-Qaeda that was even in Iraq at any time. And his link to the administration is sketchy at best. That means, like, he was around there.
I wanted to see Fahrenheit 911 with you before we did the show. I read some stuff of a story of how, like, of all these things that was brought up in the movie, Michael Moore put in there, but...
Well, we talked about Afghanistan and how, like, and securing a natural gas pipeline in it quite a while ago.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we... so it's just this justification, because all wars are fought for the acquisition of new resources. That's the only way it can financially justify sending troops, expending energy and other resources to acquire more. It's not to free another country. It's to put in another government, which is going to be...
susceptible or...
Yeah, well, it's going to be...
cohesive.
Subsidiary.
Well, it's... empathetic to our wants and needs for fuel and resources. And the only thing the Middle East has is what we need the most of.
What's funny?
And that's crude oil, baby.
It's funny that we're going down this, if we're going on this line of conversation, I think a lot of this, too, is that we can drill here. I think they say, well, we can't do it because of the environmentalists. I believe that the environmentalists don't have as much power. I believe it's the government making that reason up to why we can't drill here, so we can suck everyone else dry and be the last one to have it.
I'd like to point out, though, just real quickly, a lot of the crude oil that's supposedly on American soil is locked up in shale rock.
On the reserves.
Well, no, shale rock can actually hold oil, and they're counting it towards the so-called American crude oil in our land, but you can't drill for it. It's not just free flowing. It doesn't just release itself from the shale rock. So they're working on ways to shake it free, but as it is right now, a large amount of American oil resources are locked away, if you will.
Huh.
Well, yeah, because at $40 or even $50 a barrel, it's inefficient to pull it out of there. When it gets to be $100-$150 a barrel, now you'll start seeing that we'll start pumping that, our own resources out.
Now, what I really want to see is how the world changes power when hydrogen fuel cell really comes out and becomes popular.
Or biodiesel.
It's going to be biodiesel, dude. I've been a really hardcore...
I think it's a combination of the two.
Well, that's true, but I've been a really hardcore like hydrogen buff for years. And then we actually had an article here a couple weeks ago about biodiesel. And now I'm thinking about getting biodiesel actually tattooed because it's such an amazing product.
Well, they said for the Arizona, like, state vehicles, I remember I heard something on the radio.
Yeah.
They said that they're going to be moving a lot of them over to biodiesel.
Yeah, they're doing actually a pilot program to see how effective it is.
Yeah. All right.
So we should be seeing actually, like, that infrastructure, come into place.
Yeah.
Imagine now, just real quickly, the third world countries this is going to create when the Arab nations are used to having all of this money, just throwing money away left and right, and then all of a sudden everything that they have, their only natural real resource is gone. It means nothing anymore.
Well, they're going to have to do something else then with their country than just sell oil. They're
well, you know what? Then they
different.
Can't afford law rockets anymore.
Yeah.
Sorry, little Johnny. You can't get your toy rocket anymore to shoot at the nasty Americans.
Yeah.
We just can't afford it.
Yeah. Can I get a PlayStation, though, then? I can get that from Japan. Okay. Wow, I get toward the end of the show, but I'm going to squeeze in some of the stuff here. There's this new technology that that Texas Instruments has developed. It's a new DSL technology, and basically it's called UniDSL or UDSL. And basically what it does, it's backwards compatible with standardized variations of DSL, including asynchronous DSL, and very high-speed DSL, which is VDSL, which I didn't know until reading this article, can do up to 52 megabits per second, will allow carriers to boost their bandwidth to 200 megabits per second.
Smoke it.
That's pretty fast. Now, I think they have some of the limitations, because DSL has always been notorious to being limited by their distance. VDSL basically can get 52 megabits per second, but can only transmit signals up to 800 meters. UDSL provides middle ground because the technology is backwards compatible. Adheres to requirements of both technologies, but for example, distances greater than 1 kilometer. It provides ADSL services and ADSL data rates at shorter distances. It can provide VDSL service with data rates that can match or exceed VDSL. In some instances, scanning here for the actual distance, I'm not finding it.
I'd like to point out this real quickly. Once again, this forces people, if they want to get to this service, to shell out quite a bit of money to tear out their old lines and put in new lines.
Yeah.
Just like the problems when you go from Cat 5 to Cat 6 cable. You know, you have to get all the proper shielding, you have to have the line quality, you have to have good quality cable. You know, there's so many different components when you go into this whole thing that I think is going to become just too troublesome. You can put through a lot of information through a very short wire, but the stretching that wire out long is going to prove very troublesome.
Yeah. Texas Instruments expects to have samples of these new chips, they're talking about their chips to make this technology work, available in the second half of next year. So somewhere around 2006, you know, it's just the same thing with power through, you know, all these different, types of things that are going to be coming out, power through the internet through the power lines, which we have the service here called M-Power that sends data back and forth already through the power lines, but at a very small rate. And the funny thing is that, well, not the funny thing, it's George Norrie from, Coast to Coast AM Radio. They're a big... George Norrie and why am I forgetting his name? The main guy from Coast to Coast.
Oh, Bob. Art.
Art Bell. Yeah, Art Bell. There's actually a website out there, and I forget the name, that's actually protesting against power, internet over the power lines because of interference it's going to provide to a lot of bands on the radio.
Yeah, because it actually works in kind of the same way as radio.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in concrete, you know, just
a lot of distortion. A lot of bad things for ham radio operators shortwave.
But now at the same time, think about that. You change it so that you actually use the power lines to transmit radio as well, and you do away with that.
Yeah, but then there's just a lot of transmitting coming off a lot of power that's really close to your home.
Well, we already get that.
I don't know if that's an issue as well.
Well, you know, probably the worst that will happen would be some sterilization and, well, hey.
Yeah. Yahoo jumps up to 100 megabytes of space on their email now.
Which means I can hold even more spam in my inbox.
Yes,
it's great.
But no, they do that along with Gmail has. It sounded like I was just at Jesus Mail. Gmail has a gigabyte of storage.
Well, it's time that Jesus got on the internet anyway.
Yeah. They bumped it up to 100 megabytes. And let's see, we got the first mobile phone virus has been discovered.
Oh yeah, I heard about that the other day. And
yeah,
but
Optimizer's all excited about this here.
I think I mentioned something about that probably last year or something.
Yeah.
Seems like that. That it was like, wait until mobile phone viruses come out, man.
Oh yeah. The first ever computer virus that infected mobile phones has been discovered, antivirus software developer said today, which is June 16th, adding that up to now it had had no harmful effect. The French unit of the Russian security software developer, all right, Kaspersky Labs, said that the virus called Kabir, appears to have been developed by an international group specializing in creating viruses, which try to show that no technology is reliable and safe from their attacks.
Whoa.
Kabir...
what about my step-o-meter for McDonald's?
Yeah.
Can somebody hack that and, reduce or increase the amount of steps I've taken today?
could possibly do that.
All right.
Kabir infects the Symbian operating system that it uses several makes of mobile phones, actually mine as well, notably the Nokia brand, and propagates through the new Bluetooth wireless technology that is in several new mobile phones. If the virus succeeds in penetrating the phone, it writes the inscribed Carib on the screen, and then it's activate every time when the phone is turned on. Is then able to scan for phones that are also using Bluetooth technology and is able to send a copy of itself to the first handset that it finds. According to the antivirus software developer F-Secure, the discovery of Kabir is proof that the technologies are now available to create viruses for mobile phones and that they are now known to virus writers of computer viruses. Antivirus experts have been warning for months that mobile phone viruses are set to multiply given the increasingly diverse uses of mobile phones. Lots of fun there. Now, I will get really pissed off. You know, you can screw up my Windows box, but don't screw up my communications device of my phone.
Well, yeah, that's actually... What do you think would be more destructive of shutting down all, like, the home PCs or shutting down...
Our ability to communicate.
Yeah, or whole cell phone network.
Yeah.
I think that would be a little bit more destructive.
Hey, whoever writes that and makes that happen is going to be the new Kevin Mitnick out there.
Oh, he's going to be like the new Bin Laden.
Yeah.
Whoever writes that and makes that is going to be on the FCC want list.
Well, yeah. 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 And a few other probably hidden lists. All right. Let's see. I'm going to skip that. And going to... talk about that. Yeah, you know, actually there's a document on EFF.org, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, a bunch of good guys over there, and gals. Cory Doctorow has a article here about Microsoft DRI, or DRM, Digital Rights Management, and how he points out some of the things that are not so good about it. I would just say go over there and check it out, EFF.org. They've got lots of papers on lots of stuff. Search out Microsoft Research DRM Talk. Some interesting points are made in there. And to wrap up the show with the last talk here, nothing too interesting, but basically it's Windows XP Service Pack 2 is going to be good for security, but it breaks a lot of backwards compatibility with things. Some applications will not work. And here's some of the features that will happen with the Service Pack 2. The Internet Connection Firewall is now enabled by default, which improves security for SOHO users. However, in a corporate environment, it would cause problems for users trying to connect to network resources. Firewall will also now activate much earlier in the boot cycle, even before the network stack is embedded or shut down. It will now remain active until after the stack is disabled. The Messenger service is now disabled by default. Yay! So you can't get those stupid messages on your screen for no reason whatsoever. You ever done that? You've been at school or something like that, and somebody like sends a message to your computer, it goes beep, says like, you suck. You just net send computer name message. The pop-up ad blocker has been turned on by default. Why don't they just kind of recode Internet Explorer a little bit? A unified security application called the Windows Security Center has been added. NX support is added for Windows XP. NX no executable will allow NX-enabled CPUs to mark certain areas of memory as non-executable. That is, any code pushed into those areas, perhaps by malware such as Blaster or other viruses, will just sit there unable to run and therefore be rendered harmless. That's nice. This will harden the OS against notorious buffer or overrun threats. NX is currently only supported for AMD's K8 and Intel's Itanium processors. But a 32 and 64-bit support for this important security feature is expected in most future processor releases. DCOM gets a new set of restrictions on the form of access control lists for nearly every action on the COM server. There will also be more detail of the COM permissions, which will allow administrators to fine-tune COM permission policies. As improved port management, it will no longer be up to the application to close ports after it is finished before if a developer left out closing routine or an application crashed, a port would remain open and leave the XP open to attack. Mm-hmm. Service Pack 2 encourages port management with the application whitelist that only a user and administrator of privileges can alter. Placing an application, such as peer-to-peer program, on the whitelist causes ports to be managed automatically. Such applications can also be run as a regular user rather than needed local administrative privileges to open ports on ICF. And there are new RPC restrictions, health tightening communications, XP certified changes in this area, letting administrators fine-tune RPC services. This granular control over RPC will allow you to specify that a port be used for IPC even in an application is not on the whitelist. There are a lot of changes for RPC, including a new restriction remote clients registry key that can, by default, block most, but not all, remotely anonymous access to RPC interfaces on the system. This RPC interface restriction will require the RPC caller to perform authentication, which makes it more difficult to attack an interface and helps mitigate against Trojan attacks. Now, the question to Optimizer is, do you think there's still raw socket support on TCP/IP?
I'm going to wait and see on that one, but my guess is yes, because that's still part of the kernel.
Yeah. And go ahead. I'll give Optimizer some time here to go ahead and explain what... And we talked about this in a show a long time ago when Windows 2000 first came out, but what the raw socket problem is on Windows 2000 XP machines.
Yeah, the Gibson Research Corporation, GRC.com, I believe it is, has an excellent write-up on it. But to make a long story short, it is the ability to completely alter the TCP/IP packet information as it's leaving from your computer, which means any MAC address, TCP/IP, and most of the routing information can be completely changed after it leaves your computer.
To a spoofed just any virtual, like anything you want. And Windows 98 didn't have this, 95 didn't have this. This was something that was just when they rewrote the TCP/IP stack for Windows.
Yeah, Windows NT and 2000 both did not have that feature as well. Only XP is doing that.
Only XP. Okay. They're wondering why they added these features, and that's one of the features that they added to.
Yeah, honestly, even the Gibson Research Corporation people couldn't even figure out why raw socket support was added. The only thing they could really figure out was maybe for some sort of internal monitoring devices, but that sounds a little too conspiracy theory for me.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is...
But at the same time, because that seems to be the easiest idea, that's probably the most accurate.
Occam's razor.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, well, that's going to wrap up the show. Come down to Hope, if not, to see my talk, but also the great con that we're going to be having down there. And go ahead and post the forums. Those are back up now, and I think that's about it. Anybody else have anything interesting to say? No? Okay. Was it a no?
Well, I've been having a thought lately.
About time.
But it quite hasn't formulated yet. It hasn't coagulated. It's
all right.
It's in this weird, like...
June 27, 2008 show?
That's probably closer, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, this is your...
Then I'll spew absolute truth that will, actually turn these, actually when it's going through the internet, it will change it into a bio, spewing... thing that
VR.
Actually
everyone knows that Clark Kent is Superman. Okay.
Oh, man!
Everyone knows this, okay? And vice versa. Okay, well, that's our show. This is Slip Mode signing out.
And VR having a brain fart.
Optimizer out.
All right. See everyone in 2 weeks. See you then. I'm going to go to the next one.